Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Open until 2, Monday through Saturday. Celebrating Valentine's with hand-decorated sugar cookies, chocolate diff puff pastry palmiers, and chocolate currant mousse cake.
Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. At the end of the program, we're going to hear an interesting story. This has to do with Representative Patrice Arendt. Her father was in World War II and disobeyed direct orders. That saved lives in the infantry battalion, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. And that team, along with the Nisei Military Intelligence Service, was honored yesterday at the legislature. We'll get that fascinating story from World War II with Representative Arendt and her father at the end of the program. We're going to spend most of the hour talking about higher education, and we begin with Representative Joel Briscoe, Democrat from the Salt Lake City area. Representative Briscoe, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me online.
Appreciate you coming back on with us. We had you on, I think, a couple of weeks ago, talking about challenges to the federal government. We move to higher education, and this is something I'm sure, well, we're all interested in higher education, but especially in your profession. You're a former high school teacher, I understand.
That's correct.
So you sent many kids off to college, I'm sure. I want to ask first about the budget. Does it look like there will be any money for increases in higher education in the budget this year?
Well, one of the critical needs, higher education needs, that was not in the governor's budget, which I hope we'll find money for, is for a salary increase. The governor recommended a salary increase for public employees and teachers, 1%, but did not recommend for higher education, and that's a critical need in retaining and keeping and attracting staff and teachers and professors. But you know, those decisions are being made this week. Appropriations committees will be making those recommendations. You know, higher ed needs more than just a stand pat budget. They have taken huge hits in the last 3 years. 22% increase in enrollment, 12% less in state funds. That we've been adding students at a greater clip than we've been adding them to kindergarten through 12th grade, and we've actually cut their budgets. So Utahns pride themselves on efficiency and doing more with less, but what we're doing in higher ed right now is a little crazy.
So I guess this will depend on if there's perhaps more money in the budget than originally projected?
Well, since the 1996 constitutional amendment, all the money in the education fund can be spent on both higher education and can be spent on K-12 education. And there's $188 million in the education fund that we believe will be available for spending in fiscal year 2013. And not all of that $188 million has been appropriated. I think at one point I saw $15 million of that appropriated new to higher education, leaving about $100 million on the table. So I'm hoping more of that money shows over in the K-12 and in the higher ed budget.
What are the most pressing needs, then, budget-wise? Retention of faculty?
Retention of faculty is a very high priority. There are also some significant capital costs. I know the University of Utah is looking for $50 million. They have, I know, a professor at the University of Utah who's doing some research with some researchers and professors at Stanford University. 2 months, he lost 2.5 days of research due to power outages that were not caused by weather. The University of Utah has three different types of electrical systems. They, in order to grow and continue to be a functioning research institution, they want to upgrade their electrical system and distribution system. And there are similar issues, different issues. Every campus has some needs. The University, Utah Valley University, UVU, down in Orem, is significantly underfunded compared to its peer institutions in the state, and every college and campus in the state of Utah compared to their peer institutions around the country are only getting about 75% of what they'd be getting if they were in other states. So there's significant challenges.
The word in the fall, when the enrollment figures came out, it looked like the enrollment boom was slowing. However, some individual universities, Utah Valley University is one, continue to grow at a very fast pace.
It makes sense. I mean, it's the second biggest county in Utah. BYU takes an enormous number of students from outside the state of Utah, and you've got a huge population boom in the area, and it's a huge institution.
I wonder, I don't know if you were at the presentation, this got some headlines, Professor Clayton Christensen from Harvard. The headline is quite stark. I'm reading from the Deseret News, Utah higher education must adapt or die. He's bringing his disruptive innovation ideas to higher education and touting economies of scale with online courses. And you mentioned the bricks and mortar needs. Some would say that education in Utah needs to get away from bricks and mortar, get more onto online.
You know, I worked at the Deseret News 30 years ago, putting myself through the University of Utah, and you do need to read more than the headline. You need to dive into the article, because the headline writers are quite good at being pithy. Adapt or Die. I haven't read his book. I have read his book, Disrupting Class, Dealing with Kindergarten through 12th Grade Education. And some people have read his book in kindergarten through 12th grade education and said all education in the future is going to be done on computers. I read his book. It doesn't really say that. College education is expensive. My daughter's a student at Utah State University and was studying an upper-level chemistry course and was not doing well and was very frustrated. I encouraged her to meet with her professor, and his solution was to email him while she was doing her homework. She got an A-minus on the course. She could not have passed that class by just taking it online. She could not have passed that class without the professor being willing to, at whatever time she was doing her homework, take emails from her and respond, which is really what we call in education a blended course. I have a friend who teaches for Salt Lake Community College, and he teaches the same class both in a traditional classroom and he teaches it online. And he blends it. He tells his online students, here's my schedule of when I'm teaching it at whatever campus. If you need some extra time on this particular topic, you're welcome to come to my brick-and-mortar class and sit in, and if extra time helps you. And if you talk to the people who, like him, who teach online courses, a significant number of them don't make it through on one chance and take it a second time and sometimes a third time, and the dropout rate of people who start those classes and don't finish is quite high. We need to offer those courses, and it offers great opportunity for people to get degrees who wouldn't normally be able to go to a brick and mortar, but it's never going to replace. I was an English major at the University of Utah, and I don't know. I would hate to have thought that a lot of the discussions we had about the poetry read and the books we were reading would have been done online. I don't think that would have been the optimal way of getting that education.
So I think what I hear from you is that it needs to be a mixture of things going forward.
I think that that's going to be the best practice. There are some things that computers do it very efficiently, but they are, after all, only tools. They don't teach. There's an incredible amount of information that's available at our hands, but a poorly designed computer course is no better or worse than a poorly designed textbook or a poorly designed lecture. They are simply really wonderful tools to teach with.
Mm-hmm. And I probably did Professor Christensen a disservice by representing his ideas by that headline. As you say,
that's my note. That's my note. But I think that he also has enjoyed, people, sometimes you want to use a little bit of hyperbole to get your message out.
Right, right. And by the way, a programming note, we have tried in the past, we'll continue to try to get Professor Christensen on. Very interesting ideas that he has. He has a very busy schedule, so we're still working on that.
I'm sure there are lots of people who'd love to have him online.
Yeah, yes. We're one of those, so we'll let our listeners know if we get him on. Another factor here is possible restructuring of the courses and the emphasis in higher education. Senator Stevenson uttered a famous phrase, I believe it was last year, degrees to nowhere. He was concerned about students taking a long time getting through and then being unable to, with certain degrees, get a job. And some take that to mean we should make a focus more toward technical education, more resources toward our applied technology colleges. I wonder if you agree with that.
Well, I've been told that Senator Stevenson's degree is in psychology. Maybe he's feeling a little bit of remorse, but if it is true that he has a psychology degree, it doesn't seem to have impeded his ability to be successful. And his mentor in this project is former Governor Jeb Bush from Florida, Governor of Florida, whose degree is in Latin American studies. So with that as a note, I concur with the senator. I think STEM education, science, technology education, and math should, I agree with him that we should encourage students to go into those fields and those majors. But to take it as far as the senator has and say that the rest, we shouldn't fund universities for graduating people with English degrees or philosophy degrees, I think is ludicrous and not very thoughtful or foresightful. And a well-educated populace, right now the job market's kind of tight because we're all being more efficient and companies have held their own by just keeping the employees they've got and sometimes reducing the number of employees, and we're all doing the same, or we're all doing more work. That doesn't mean it's always going to be the case. There is a lot of growth in the job market right now and a lot of technical-related fields, internet-related fields. The market will help hopefully steer students in that direction, but people too long have thought of degrees as only having a private benefit. Well, good for you. You're going on to college. You're going to get a better job. But there's a public good aspect to funding institutions. We get increased tax revenues and greater productivity. Forbes magazine said that if they gave the example of Milwaukee, that if they increased their college attainment rate in the metro area of Milwaukee by 1%, to put another $1.2 billion of personal income into its economy. And in fact, if the rest of the 51 biggest metro areas in the United States would increase their college graduation rate by 1%, it would add $124 billion in personal income every year. We need to start looking at investments in the college and university system as investments in the overall health of Utah and the towns and communities in which we live.
If you just joined us, we're talking about higher education at the legislature, those bills being debated, and some of the issues. We're talking with Representative Joel Briscoe, who represents area in the Salt Lake City area, is a former high school teacher, and so has a very interesting perspective on this, in addition to the general perspective. You're welcome to join this conversation if you have a question or comment at 1-800-826-1495. 1-800-826-1495. Coming up in the second segment, we'll be talking with Senator Casey Anderson. And in the last segment, a very interesting story, Representative Patrice Arendt. Her father fought in World War II, disobeyed direct orders, and saved fellow soldiers because of it. We'll get that story from World War II at the end of the program. In the meantime, the number is 1-800-826-1495 to call into the program here. I wonder specifically about preparation for college, and this is something you'd have very interesting perspective on, having prepared students who then went on to college. There have been several initiatives suggested, several debated and passed at the legislature, and including exams to prove readiness for college. I wonder what you think, if there are any initiatives now that need to be done.
The state's moving toward requiring all students, high school students, to take the ACT test. I have mixed feelings about that because the test was designed to indicate, I think it's a good idea to get students ready for some external test that's nationally measured and has some national norms, and the ACT test does a wonderful job of indicating whether or not a student is ready to go on to college. I think more important is the plan that Prosperity 2020 and the Chamber of Commerce has proposed, and the governor has put in his budget to fund providing tests that the ACT program gives in 8th and 10th grade, in which they can indicate whether a student's ready to go on and take some more enriched classes to get them better prepared to go on to college. I attended 10 years ago when I was on the Salt Lake City School Board, a presentation given by the College Board. They had a superintendent from North Carolina who's now in Maryland, last I heard, and he had a significant African-American population in his communities. He had schools that weren't teaching any advanced placement classes whatsoever. So they gave this test to all 8th and 9th graders, and then they told their counselors, look, if these tests indicate these kids will be successful in these advanced placement IB tracks, we want you to enroll them in those courses in high school in 9th and 10th grade that will get them ready for that in 11th and 12th grade. And sometimes there was resistance from parents because they said, I signed up for this class, and you come back and you put me in physics. I never signed up for physics. In one instance, he actually made the school actually re-enroll all the students and then just tell them, just don't ask permission, just put them in the courses. His advanced placement participation rate and student participation shot through the roof. And we should note that Utah just recently was ranked last year as 10th out of all 50 states in the percentage of students taking and passing an AP course. We have one of the highest AP pass rates, and one out of every five high school students in Utah does. We need to work on that percentage below the one out of every five. The top 20% are getting ready. We need to work on the next 20% and the next 20% and making sure that their education in high school and before gets them ready. Yeah. And Chamber of Commerce is actually talking about full-day kindergarten, and a lot of people tell you you've got to start prior to kindergarten. There's a wonderful preschool program in Granite School District in, I think, 40 of their elementary schools. They have data now that students who have taken their 3- and 4-year-old class before they enter kindergarten, who if they normally would have needed English language services because they don't speak English as a first language or would normally have needed special ed services, don't require as many of them and are actually outperforming their peers who haven't had the preschool program. So there are things we can do early, which will in the long run make a much bigger success for us in getting more students ready for a higher education post high school.
Just following up on that, I was having a conversation just recently with a friend talking about the fact that there seems to be, in my point of view, seems to be some pressure on parents to get their children into, you know, the full-day kindergarten, the preschool, and that ripple effect that goes throughout their lives. But I was a little depressed by that. You have to get your kids into school earlier and earlier. My friend was totally on board with it. Well, if you need to get your kid in, get your kid in. But it does seem to be a subtle pressure on all parents earlier and earlier for that education.
Not every child comes to kindergarten towing up at the same starting line. Not every child comes with the same advantages that some parents have given them. Every elementary school in Salt Lake City has one classroom of kindergarten that is full day, and there are waiting lists. Every Title I school in Salt Lake City School District, every one of their kindergartens is full day. And there are waiting lists to get parents who want to get their children into the preschool programs in the Granite School District. These are parents who want to opt their kids in. They're not being forced to go in. They just recognize there's an advantage here, and their kids are better ready and better able to succeed. You know, people need to understand that in Salt Lake County, under the age of 5, 1 out of every 3 children is an ethnic minority. If you really want to understand what Utah is going to look like in the future, you need to start visiting some elementary schools. It doesn't look like that in my population, my age cohort, but the under 10, under 5 age cohort, Utah looks very different than what many adults see.
Interesting. That is a glimpse in the future. Mm-hmm. I wonder, the tenure was recently debated at the legislature. The bill would have eliminated tenure or severely reduced it in universities and colleges except for Utah State University and University of Utah. I wonder what your view of the issue of tenure is.
I mean, I have full disclosure here. I mean, I got a brother who's got tenure and teaches at Utah Valley University, and I have a brother who teaches back at Northern Illinois University. My father used to teach at Westminster College, and you know, I have an uncle who used to work for the Space Dynamics Lab at Utah State University and used to teach some courses on campus. I don't understand Representative Herod's thinking on this issue. I think it would be like unilateral disarmament for all the universities in the state's college campuses. Even though he exempted USU and Utah State and the University of Utah, the headlines across the country were the bill to be passed would be, going back to my headline issue, legislature bans tenure on campus. And you know, when it comes to going out and bringing people into the USTAR program to do research for the Energy Dynamics Lab at USU or to come in and do USTAR research at the University of Utah, that would be one more gigantic hurdle for people to overcome to try and bring in people that you might want to make tenure. Maybe some of those people just want to come and be researchers, but many people want to come and have tenure. The system, the higher ed system, has instituted a program where they do tenure track. Professors on tenure get 5-year reviews, so they don't just get it once and they're done. And they're working on making sure that there's strong teaching and research and professional practice, which is appropriate. But to lose tenure would be a drastic mistake and make it much more difficult to attract people to be researchers and teachers on our college campuses.
Mm. Finally, Representative Briscoe, on this topic, tuition. Some would say the state students who go into our state and public universities and colleges are subsidized, and perhaps we should increase tuition. On the other side is accessibility issue, and some poor students will not be able to go. I wonder, should we hold the line on tuition?
We don't put as much money into our colleges and university campuses as other states do, and we're concerned about how long it takes students to get through college, and if they got through quicker, we could open up more classroom space for more students. And how do you get students through quicker when they have to work so many hours in order to pay for school? I mean, I've got a daughter going to Northwestern who's $30,000 a year. I got a friend whose daughter is going to a law school back east, $70,000 a year, room and board and tuition. A lot of the people you saw at the Occupy protests, and I met some of them down in Salt Lake and Pioneer Park, were just graduated in-school students, and one of their big issues was the cost of repaying college and the cost of going to college. So I would be a proponent of using all $188 million in our education fund for education this year and not shifting it over to other uses and trying to keep tuition rates down.
We'll be taking we're keeping an eye on all of these issues, and we're going to be talking higher education and other issues with Senator Casey Anderson in the next part of the program. Representative Joel Briscoe, thanks so much
you
for
bet.
Joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate you taking the time. Coming up, following a break and a Steve Eaton commentary, we will be talking with Senator Casey Anderson, 28th Senate District in Southern Utah. Talk about some of these same issues. At the end of the program, we will meet Representative Patrice Arendt's father, Marvin, who was honored for his heroism recently at the legislature, disobeyed direct orders, and saved lives of his fellow soldiers in World War II. And that segment's coming up at the end of the program. Stay tuned. More conversation from the legislature following this break.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
I believe that I am in the 1%, and the rest of you are in the 99%. I am sure I make less money than you do, or at least I have less money than you do. I think this might be true even if you're unemployed. When I was in college, I worked part-time on the school newspaper for minimum wage. From that money, I had to pay for tuition, rent, macaroni and cheese. Yet every Friday and Saturday night, I routinely went out on dates. I could afford to go to the movies, go out to dinner, and even buy flowers. Now I work at a grown-up job where I have the privilege of working as many hours as I want. I need not stop at 5 p.m. or on weekends, and yet I have less money in my pocket than when I was a teenager with a paper route. Our idea of eating out is to take our frozen pizza out in the backyard. My wife manages our finances because she's concerned about the social stigma that comes with declaring bankruptcy over and over. She says we have no money. I wonder if she's giving it to my friends. They go out to dinner. They go out to the movies. They go to places like Hawaii and Cancun for vacation. We've considered vacationing in southern Idaho because they have lots of room there and famous potatoes, and it's not too far away from Logan. But somehow bragging that you went to southern Idaho on vacation is like bragging you have a TV with a 21-inch screen and a remote control. Hey, you look like you had some sun on vacation. Yeah, I did. We went to southern Idaho. We got to drive really fast. It was heaven. We ate tater tots every single day. I kid you not. They have famous potatoes there, you know. I notice the disparity when I go to a jazz game. If I go, it's because someone gives me free tickets. Even if it's a weeknight game, thousands of people are there. I don't think they're all given free tickets. Not only do they have enough money to go to a jazz game, but lots of them buy food and giant foam fingers while they're there. Even in Logan, where I live, the restaurant parking lots are full. When I take a midweek vacation day, I notice that people are shopping at Smith's and Walmart. Are they all in on some big conspiracy? How come they're not at work? Do they think I won't eventually notice? Some luxury car dealers now advertise that with their new lease program, anyone can afford to drive away in one of their new cars. Somehow, I don't think they mean me. I can just see it now. I'd show up at a dealership, the sales associate would ignore me as long as possible, and then approach me in hopes of getting me to leave. Yeah, I'm ready to lease a 2012 Turbo VQX, I'd announce with pride, pointing at the silver model on the showroom floor. I heard an advertisement on the radio that said that they're now affordable for everyone. After some hesitation, the associate would say slowly to me, "Well, they have become more affordable. How much do you think you can afford in monthly payments?" "Well, I get $5 a week allowance, so I could afford $20 a month, no problem," I would say, knowing that I was stretching the truth because I don't really get allowance anymore. Then he would patiently explain to me that the new Turbo VXQs are indeed affordable to everyone except me. He would say that it just wouldn't be practical to put that in their advertisements. The announcer would have to read, "Have you ever wanted a Turbo VXQ but felt you couldn't afford it? Well, now you can, unless your name is Steve Eaton." Well, the truth is, I don't need no stinking Turbo VXQ anyway. I watch the presidential campaign commercials. I know things are about to change. Neither Obama nor the Republican nominee is going to put up with those stinking people in Washington, D.C. who've been doing everything wrong. Not for 1 minute. They are outsiders. Even Obama is an outsider, and they know how to roll up their sleeves and work for America. And it just so happens that I am an American. Once they're elected, things will change. In the meantime, they know where to find me. I'll be popping tater tots and flying like the wind in southern Idaho. This is Steve Eaton.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from the USU Department of Music's 8th Annual Jazz Night at the Sky Club, benefiting the Larry Smith Jazz Scholarship, this Friday and Saturday with a silent auction and hors d'oeuvres, followed by a dinner, big band music, and dancing. Information is at music.usu.edu.
Thanks for staying with us. We continue our conversation with legislators with Senator Casey Anderson of the 28th Senate District. This covers Beaver, Garfield, Iron, Kane, Millard, and Washington counties. Senator Anderson was appointed in May of 2011 to fill the seat vacated when Senator Dennis Powell passed away. And he sits on the Senate Government Operations and Political Subdivisions Committee and the Senate Natural Resources, Agriculture, and Environment Committee, as well as some appropriations committees. We were talking higher education and other topics. And Senator Anderson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
We appreciate you taking some time during this busy legislative session. I want to talk about some bills that you are sponsoring, very interesting bills and some other issues, but continue, first of all, this discussion of higher education that we started with Representative Briscoe in the first part of the program, and specifically with the budget. Where do you think the priorities should be? Of course, we're all talking about K through 12. Do you think there will be money for increases in higher education?
Well, I know the governor's budget recommendation, wasn't on the priority list for him. But I know, just speaking from the perspective of the legislature, that higher education is a very high priority for us. And I certainly hope that the higher ed appropriations subcommittee is able to, make a good argument in order to get that request back in, get that into the budget. So I know for me, I've got one of the best universities in the country in my district, Southern Utah University. It constantly ranks in the top 10 for value. It really is a draw from people all around the country, and I think that we need to be focusing on higher education. So I hope that they're able to get that request high on their priority list, and that the governor will accept that request.
I'm sure some of the needs at Southern Utah University are the same as other institutions. Are there specific needs that they've told you about that they're pushing?
Not particularly. There's a couple kind of smaller items that are important. Southern Utah University wants to, and I certainly don't mean to speak for them, but from our discussions, they tend to favor the quality over quantity type aspect. I know that they've been working diligently in order to increase the standards that it takes in order to get accepted into that university. They really want to focus on who graduates from there rather than who attends. We want to make sure that we're graduating our students so that they're getting that certificate and moving forward in life. So I think that Southern Utah University, one of the big issues was that we weren't funding salary increases for our higher education staff. So I know that that's a priority, and it's certainly an important one.
I wonder about the employability question. There has been some push the legislature to maybe change the focus a little bit at the legislature to encourage students to get into more technical fields so they'll be more immediately employable. And I notice your degrees are psychology and forensic science, bachelor's and master's. But I wonder if you agree with that we ought to be encouraging funneling students more into the technical fields.
Well, to some degree, we certainly need to be speaking with the leaders in the business community and making sure that our students that we're help paying to educate are getting degrees that our businesses here in the state of Utah are looking for. We certainly don't want to be importing our workforce from other states when we've got great students here that are looking for jobs. And if we do that, then our students are going to be going to other states and creating jobs in other states. So I think we just want to make sure that everything is in line, our priority is in line. So the businesses, the type of workforce that they're looking for, we need to make sure that we're educating for preparation for our future.
I want to talk about some pieces of legislation that you're sponsoring. One of those, I believe, is moving ahead in the Senate, production and sale of food. And this would, I believe, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, make a change, eliminate federal regulation if the product is grown, produced in Utah, and consumed in Utah.
For the most part, that is correct. One big issue, last year we had the Food Safety Modernization Act that passed, and one issue that was brought to me from my constituents is they kind of feel like mega agricultural corporations and their lobbying efforts in D.C. have paid off. Their concern is that they're going to price local farmers out of the market or regulate them out of existence, and thus removing competition so that they can then increase prices of the goods that they produce. So what we simply want to do is say, look, if you grow food in the state of Utah and you sell it in the state of Utah, that regulation is subject to the authority of the Utah Department of Agriculture, not the FDA. So it really is a bill that addresses several issues, including our food safety, local control versus federal control, and also protecting our consumers, that there's always going to be access to food and produce for lower-income families that might not be able to afford higher prices.
Does this have any element that you could, on the face of it, looking at this bill, lump this in with other bills and resolutions which you might put together under a theme of pushback against the federal government, states' rights kind of a thing? Is there any of that kind of motivation behind this bill?
Well, I think anytime the federal government does something that the state doesn't like, then we have an obligation to our constituents to push back to some degree on that. The motivation behind this bill is primarily to protect our local producers, our local consumers, make sure that we're not criminalizing people for simply growing their own food and consuming their own food. So that was more the motivation of this bill. Like I said, we need to protect our local producers. We need to make sure that our Utah Department of Agriculture isn't just being overwhelmed by federal agencies. We have that agency in place to protect Utah, public health issues with related agriculture, and I think they do a great job, and we need to continue to allow them to do their work.
Just out of curiosity, I hadn't really thought about this before. I don't know if you have a percentage. Is it a large percentage of product that is produced in Utah and consumed? The whole process happens in Utah?
It's not a large percentage. I think, one thing that the state of Utah is very fortunate with is we do export a lot of food. So under my bill, none of that would even apply. This bill would only apply to food that is grown and sold in the state of Utah. Now, currently, 95% of the food that is inspected nationally, 95% of it is done by their local, either their state agency or their local health department. Only 5% is inspected by the FDA. So this bill really only applies to a very small segment, not only of our agricultural producers, but also to those who are not already being inspected by local agencies.
Another bill that I see listed with you as a sponsor, Senate Bill 189, transfer of state-owned golf courses. There's nothing in the bill at this point. I wonder if you'd tell us about this.
We've been in discussions with state parks. I have a heritage park in my district. I have a few of them, actually, that basically their primary focus is to preserve, protect, and educate individuals on the heritage of a state of Utah. So with that educational component, the historical component, I simply feel like those should not be put on the same playing field as golf courses. So when we're dealing with budget cuts, I'm not a big fan of 7% cuts across the board. We need to identify what really the government should be doing versus what it shouldn't be doing, and what should our priorities be. And in discussions with state parks, they tend to agree with that line of thinking. So we've been in discussions with them, and we're working right now to be able to issue out an RFP on those four golf courses, and I've been very thankful to have the support of the Division of State Parks on that one. They're on board. So as far as that bill, there's no current language to the bill. I think what we're going to do is just kind of work internally. We don't necessarily have to have legislation in order to have state parks kind of move in that direction.
Mm-hmm. So this would, if it's successful, those golf courses would be sold off to private enterprise?
Not necessarily sold. We would maintain ownership of the parks. Somebody else would simply be in charge of managing them. And the feedback that we've gotten is that all of them could be managed, as a package, and be able to be profitable, so that not only would the industry that takes them over be able to make a profit, but also the state of Utah would be able to have our bond obligations covered. So right now, the state of Utah is not able to cover those obligations. We have to subsidize them out of the general fund. So this really would be a win-win for everybody.
And finally, this is very interesting. I'm just wondering the motivation behind this. Senate Resolution 1, informal Senate poll on United States Senate candidates. This would require a poll among the legislature on who they preferred among candidates for U.S. Senate. Is that the case?
Essentially, one thing that I feel like has been an important issue for our state is we have, and it really has nothing to do with the upcoming election. It doesn't have anything to do with the last U.S. Senate election. It's simply a principle that my constituents have expressed to me that they would like to see the state of Utah move more of a direction in. And that principle is that our U.S. senators seem to have lost touch with their home state, their home constituents. And really what you see it is in campaign financing. In most cases, U.S. senators receive over 90% of their campaign contributions from out of state. So what we want to do is we want to restore that connection between the citizens of Utah and our U.S. senators. And a real easy way of doing that is simply by having our elected officials here in the state of Utah do a voluntary, informal, secret ballot poll on who they feel would be best able to represent the state of Utah.
Well, we are out of time. Before I let you go, Senator Anderson, I was reading an interview with you. This is just so interesting. I can't let this go without mentioning it. You were a full-time social worker for the Paiute tribe, I guess?
And then
recently you've started up a market research company.
Well, essentially, you mentioned before my education is in psychology. Specifically, there was a component there, statistical analysis and research. So really, that's what my educational background is in. And when I was elected to the state senate, my family, we kind of decided that we need something a little bit more flexible rather than an 8-to-5, full-time day job. So we need to be able to supplement that income. As a member of the state senate, our base salary is only about $7,000. So I've got a young family. I've got a 6-month-old baby daughter. And we just felt like that would be the best direction to move in. So I'm excited to get that started, and things are moving forward nicely with it.
Oh, so this was occasioned by your public service then?
Correct.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, it's good to get to know you a little better, and some of the bills you're sponsoring talk about higher education as well. Senator Casey Anderson has been our guest in this part of the program. Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Coming up, a very interesting story. There's a resolution that was put forward at the legislature yesterday honoring some of Utah's veterans from World War II. And a very interesting story. Patrice Arendt, who you know as a representative, her father has a very interesting story from World War II, and we'll have him tell that story coming up following a brief break.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
Support for coverage of the Utah legislature comes from USU's Department of Journalism and Communication, dedicated to free expression and mutual understanding in the information age, and covering breaking Cache Valley news at hardnewscafe.usu.edu.
Thanks for being with us for this Focus on the Legislature, a program of Access Utah. We're doing these weekly during the session. And we got word that yesterday the House of Representatives was voting on House Resolution 5, a concurrent resolution designating February 18th, 2012, as Utah's Congressional Gold Medal Day for World War II veterans of the 100th Infantry Battalion, 442nd Regimental Combat Team, and the Nisei Military Intelligence Service. And interestingly, some of those veterans of the 442nd are alive today because Marvin Arendt, a local World War II veteran, disobeyed an order. The surprised Representative Patrice Arendt, the word is, because Mr. Arendt, known for obeying orders. We bring on Representative Patrice Arendt. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a joy to be with you this morning.
And Marvin Arendt, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Representative Arendt, this is a great occasion to honor these veterans, including your father. It must have been a wonderful day yesterday at the legislature.
It was. These are truly some of the heroes of our country, the 442nd, the Nisei. What they did in terms of World War II is a story that everyone ought to know about.
And let's get some of that story from Mr. Marvin Arendt. You served. Tell us where you served in World War II.
In northern Italy.
Northern Italy. And you were part of the 442nd combat team, were you?
No. Mm-hmm. I was with the 894 tank destroyer unit.
And that's where this story comes in. You were a lieutenant at the time, right?
Right.
And as I understand it, you were ordered to shoot at enemy soldiers, but you didn't have a clear view, and you were concerned that that might not be enemy soldiers.
Well, we were a tank destroyer unit. And we were supposed to be supporting our American tanks while they were fighting the Germans. But most of that armor went up to northern Europe for the big battle, and so they were short armor, and we took over the duties of the tank people. Excuse me.
Interesting.
We were in artillery position. Our tank destroyer, excuse me, a tank destroyer looks like a Sherman tank without a turret.
Hmm.
And we were firing into a pass in northern Italy between two mountains and I had never been able to get through. And all of a sudden, this morning, the pass opened up and soldiers started going through. And our mission was to fire at the enemy. Well, the enemy turned out, in my opinion, to be the Anisis, who are the finest soldiers we've ever had in the American Army. Their casualty list is the highest amount of any American unit because of the dangerous missions they had. And this is a story that I've never told. In fact, my daughter just found out about it the other day because I didn't think it was worth it. Should be talked about.
Hmm.
But I was so anxious to let the people know how wonderful Anisi were and what wonderful soldiers they were. Wow. Well, anyhow, we fired a round or two, and I said, that doesn't look like Germans or Italians. That looks like the Anisis. I said, hold your fire. And I called back to company headquarters and said, I think we're firing at our own people. He said, no. The captain said, no, we've got no orders to fire, keep firing. I said, I'm positive we're firing at the Nazi. Go back to general headquarters. So we went back to general headquarters. They did it. And they came back to me and said, no, that's the enemy. Continue to fire. And I said, well, I'm 600 yards from the battleground. They're miles away. I know better than they do. I'm not going to fire until I'm sure. And as it turned out, I was lucky.
Hmm.
That actually, it was our own troops and the best troops we've ever had. And I felt that the legislature ought to know that the real heroes in this war were the Anisis from Hawaii.
Hmm.
And from all over. Those who lived in Utah and all over the country.
Now, Representative Rent, you just found out about this story?
I did. I had not known this. My dad told me recently about his willingness to disobey this order because he was risking being court-martialed when a general ordered him to fight and to shoot. And the fact that he was willing to not do that because, you know, he couldn't see them. I mean, the reality is, as my dad has explained it, he couldn't see them. He was just guessing that these were American troops. And thank God he did, because we had people on the House floor yesterday and their children and their grandchildren who would not have been alive but for my dad being willing to disobey this order.
That must have been quite the scene. That the recipients of this, like you say, wouldn't have been there. They were actually there on the House floor, I guess.
Well, not all of them, but some of them that were in Italy at the time would not have survived if they had been there and my dad had followed the orders and to shoot.
Now, remind us, the Nisei, these were Japanese-Americans?
Yes.
And as I understand it, some of these Nisei, I don't know if the Utahns, some of their families were internment camps.
Yes. Very sadly, that is true.
Just an amazing story. They were willing to go and fight. So, Mr. Arendt, I understand that the orders, one of these orders came from a general that you disobeyed.
Well, it came from general headquarters. Whether it was
general headquarters.
Or
somebody else.
Yeah, but you felt strongly enough that those might be your own troops that you disobeyed that order.
Well, we had a situation where we've been trying for weeks to get through and couldn't. And all of a sudden, we got through like it was melted butter.
Hmm.
I figured something was wrong.
Yeah. See, this was just intuition you had, though.
Well, it was luck.
Yeah.
My dad is an amazing man, but he's also the kind of person that I don't think ever disobeyed an order in his life. He pays bills the day they're due, and if you invite him to a party at 7, he's there at 7. So the fact that he would actually disobey an order, I can't even imagine. And I just think how fortunate we are that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I didn't want anybody to know about it, to tell you the truth.
Right. But then you felt that this time you wanted people to know.
Well, I've been in love with Anissa ever since, of course, because I know what they did. Not only in Italy, of course, but in the Far East, of course, they were tremendous.
Now, what was the reaction from General Headquarters or the higher-ups once it was found out that you were right and these were friendly troops?
What would you do? You'd keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Oh, really? So there was no apology or anything, just...
No, it's not in the record. You're taking my word for it. And actually, I'm a little embarrassed the fact that it has gotten out.
Yeah. You must have been very grateful that you made the decision you did.
Well, it was probably the best thing I did in the whole war.
Yeah, yeah. Representative Arendt, tell me a little bit more about the scene yesterday at the legislature. This must have been a wonderful day for those veterans.
It was, and of course they're being honored this weekend. There is a luncheon in honor of these amazing men who received the Congressional Medal of Honor when they were in Washington in November. Many of them were able to travel back, not all of them. But those gold medal recipients will be honored at a luncheon on Saturday, and I think over 1,000 people are coming, which is just amazing and so deserved.
Yeah.
And yesterday on the floor, it was, you know, everybody was there. Everyone stood to honor them. Everyone stood to honor my father separately, which was great.
And Mr. Arendt, you said that you have loved and respected these Nisi ever since. Have you kept in touch with some of them?
No, I've never told a story to anybody until just the other day.
Yeah, so maybe now an opportunity to interact with some of these people.
Well, yeah, you're talking about my dad, the world's most modest person.
Yes, yes, yes. And so sometimes these things are good to honor people who are this modest and deserving. Representative Arendt, understand it, you know, the rest of the story, Mr. Arendt was awarded a Purple Heart, came home, and like most of that generation, set about building their lives and build up a business and went from there. And a lot of times these men didn't say much about their experiences.
That's very true. So many of our heroes don't talk about it. And I think these stories are important. I think it's important to tell the next generation. Fortunately, my dad's been willing to talk to my kids about this, which is great. I mean, I want them to understand the history of our country through my dad's eyes.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. Mr. Marvin Arendt served in northern Italy in World War II, disobeyed orders. He's very glad that he did, saved lives of the Nisei soldiers because of it. And he, along with others, were honored at the legislature yesterday. Mr. Arendt, thanks so much. A pleasure to hear your story.
Well, thank you.
And Representative Patrice Arendt, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much. Take care.
And we'll be back with more from the legislature, I believe, tomorrow. We're working on a program on air quality. Hope to have that together for you for tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening today to Access Utah.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from the USU Charter Credit Union, serving members with 24 local ATMs and more than 28,000 ATM access points across Utah and the U.S. through the Credit Union Co-op Network. Information is at usuccu.org.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.